Welcome to Manager Tools. Today's topic, inheriting a poor performer, part one. Here we go. When we tell managers that the ultimate tool is raising the bar when it comes to hiring, right? Many, many, many people complain that they've never gotten to do that, right?
And they don't get to hire, right?
Right. They say they have a direct who's been a poor performer for years. They've inherited him. So they tell us, hey, hiring is great, but I didn't get the choice. What do I do about it?
The vast majority of managers can't even grip the idea of hiring being the leverage because they're always inheriting a team. And they don't want to talk about how great hiring can make a team because they're worried about the worst guy on their team. The guy who's been turfed from place to place, the guy who everybody knows is not a good performer, and everybody says, well, but Mark, I can't, you know, hiring doesn't do me any good if I can't get rid of this guy. Well, okay. We should have released this cast years ago, but what do you do about a poor performer? Somebody who is known to be a poor performer, and in fact, the assumption is they're going to work for you and you're not going to do anything about it. Well,
before you tell us what to do, though, tell us the real key secret to having an inherited poor performer. What's the good part about it? Because there is some good here.
Yeah, you're going to be the hero. No matter what, you'll be the hero. If for some reason you get rid of him, you'll be the first manager who knew enough about being a manager in order to get rid of him. And if you keep him, you'll keep him and he'll improve. One of the two things is going to be true.
And you're good either way.
Either way.
It's a blessing. It's kind of a blessing.
Whereas most managers think, I'm screwed either way. Our technique will get you to be the hero.
Now, imagine if you had a great performer, you inherited a great performer. If they continue to do great, well, you didn't do anything. They just continue to be great. And if they do poorly after you take them over,
then you're the
goat. You lose. So, you want to inherit a bunch of poor performers.
Right,
apparently, that's the
Mr.
secret.
Counterintuitive, folks. Mike Ozan. Okay. All right. We have six recommendations. First, unfortunately, it's going to be boring. You're not going to like it, but you've got to study and redocument this person's performance record. You've got to take your own notes about it. It might take you a week or two, but it'll be worth it. The second thing, and this is the thing that's going to shock people, you have to decide to give them a clean slate. Start again, start anew, start fresh. And the third thing, and this is, again, what will shock people, is you communicate both to the person once you've done your research. Both that, I'm giving you a clean slate, and I know you had poor performance in the past, and I've taken notes about it. Then, look, the next couple of steps are easy. You manage them using the Trinity, one-on-one feedback coaching delegation. You're going to have to document more carefully. And then what you do is if for some reason he fails, and we hope he doesn't, but if he does, you use all the documentation you have, not only the contemporaneous stuff, the current stuff, but also the stuff historically.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay, so tell me about the first part, finding out what you're dealing with here, which means studying and redocumenting his performance record.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of times this guidance is going to bug some people because they're going to say, well, sure, everybody can do management if it's all, you know, if that's the only thing they have to do, right? I've got work to do, Mark. So, well, okay. Yeah, and the state of management is so poor that we're willing to give away for free everything we know to try to help managers get a little bit better all over the world. The common wisdom is rarely wise, and most managers don't do the hard work. If you want it to be easy, sorry, there's not that many ways to make management easy. Management is not hard to understand, but it's a discipline that requires work, and in this case, we're going to require you to do some work. If you want better results with a poor performer that you inherited, you're going to have to do some work, as simple as that. And what we recommend is find out what you're dealing with. In probably half the cases where we know managers personally or it happened to us ourselves where we inherited a bad performer, in about half the cases, what the common wisdom was or what the rumors were, what the scuttlebutt was not completely accurate. It had grown in legend. Somebody had a bad attitude, but it was really only because he talked directly to a vice president who specifically asked for input and then got his head bitten off in a meeting. And so everybody says, ooh, stay away from Joe. He's got a bad attitude. In fact, Joe didn't have a bad attitude at all. So you've got to go back and you've got to find out what you know, what the organization knows, what this person has done, and so on.
So where do you go? Where do you start?
Yeah, well, one more thing I want to say about that. A lot of people hypothetically know this person's history, and you have to put your own thoughts in neutral a little bit and be willing to gather data and find out what the data says. Rather than just looking for information to reinforce your own belief, I know Joe's got a bad attitude or whatever. Don't do that. You say, okay, everybody says the guy's a poor performer. What do I do? And the first step is you talk to HR. I got to tell you, folks, I am regularly amazed at managers who know that someone has a checkered history, but they don't have any official data to support it. And the reason they don't have any official data is because they haven't asked. I got to tell you something. If I'm the guy that you're managing, heaven forbid, but if I'm the guy you're managing and you know what it is about me and you don't have any data to support it, and I get any whiff at all that you are going to think about terminating me in past because of my past performance, because the organization obviously has decided that stuff is not valid enough to fire me because I haven't been fired yet, you're going to have a tough time getting rid of me. You've got to know what it is you're dealing with, okay? For the purposes of convenience in this cast, we'll call this poor performer we've inherited Robert. If you know Robert has a history of poor performance and Robert hasn't worked for you, a lot of people know his history, and the first place you start is HR. If you're somebody's manager, you're entitled to review their performance records. You're entitled to it. It's a given. It's a given. Now, I will tell you, there are some HR people who haven't been given this data, haven't been given this memo, but the fact is the HR department who denies you the ability to look at your direct's previous performance history is being idiotic. Well, and guys,
it defeats the whole purpose of
Well, no, it doesn't. No, see, but here's the problem. People say, yeah, and I agree with you, it defeats the purpose. But what HR says is, well, we're here to protect the employees. Actually, no, you're not. You're here to protect the company. And the employees are not just the company. The company exists in different ways than just implying it's an employment factory. But there are HR people who says, well, there's confidentiality and this and that. No.
I'm his manager.
No, yeah, I know. But there are HR people who are idiotic. Okay, and guys, for the record, I've said before that I said, you know, I hate HR. That's not true anymore. I've learned that I don't hate HR. I hate bad HR. This would be an example of bad HR. I love HR when HR is done well, and often it's not. And HR saying, well, I can't show you his employment records. You almost want to ask, well, dude, who's looking at him? They're sitting in a club. Why are you keeping them? Exactly. Well, in the event something goes wrong. So in other words, I have to manage him without all that knowledge. Well,
something has gone wrong.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, okay, they're being idiotic if they deny you. But, guys, there's a difference between thinking they're idiotic and telling them you're being idiotic. So you don't say that. You ask nicely. You say, I have Robert working for me now, and I'm preparing development plans and reviewing past performance. Would you please provide me his performance reviews? Okay, that's the first thing you do. You say, would you please? And you ask for performance data. Okay. If they resist, if they become idiotic all of a sudden, and by the way, if you're talking to a really junior person, they probably don't know the rules and they're thinking, well, I know there's confidentiality and the lawyers are always talking to them about this, mm-hmm. and they only get involved when it's really late in the game. And so, I don't know, maybe they're inadvertently being idiotic, but we're not going to call them galactically stupid, but we are going to say it's in one way or another, it's dumb. Okay. If they push back and say, well, we can't do that, we ask why. If they give you the you know, the HR thing, and by the way, folks, if you're in HR, you know you do this, and you know there are times when your first thought is, how do I keep the lawyers happy? And that's not your first responsibility. But here's what you can say when you're talking to an HR person. You can say, what can you tell me about Robert's performance? And guys, to be clear, all we're doing at this point is trying to get some, any information at all. If they're stonewalling you, they may well try to do it completely and say, well, you know, the confidentiality, right? No. Guys, don't fight them at this moment. Okay, don't. If a person is willing to tell you as a manager of Robert that they're not going to share anything, when in fact there's no self-respecting HR person that's seen that. Now, there's certain union rules that might apply, but no self-respecting, intelligent HR person to say, no, we have records that you can't see. Unless they're court order sealed, which I suppose that's one in a billion,
right? I guess
that's
possible.
It's possible.
But you said don't do anything right there. So is that the end of the game right there?
I'm saying if somebody junior to you or your HR support person says, no, we can't give it to you, they're being an idiot, and there's no sense arguing with an idiot. But it is time to pull out the big guns.
Okay, there is something you can do.
Yeah, sure. Look, HR reports the business, so before you leave, you say, well, this is disappointing. I'm Robert's manager. I believe this is a reasonable request. My role is to help him. I'm not satisfied. Having this information is reasonable, like I say. At this point, I'll escalate to my boss, or you might say, I'm going to escalate to the VP. I'm going to escalate to the division general manager. and have her reach out to your VP or your general manager or whomever. I know my VP doesn't want me developing plans about how to improve somebody's performance without knowing what the organization knows about somebody's performance history. Now, look, guys, to be clear, you've asked twice nicely, and you've been told no in a way that is not appropriate. They think they're being appropriate. They can deny it to you. It's in their files, and they don't want to show it to you. Okay, possession is 9/10 of the law. Okay, fine. But you're not trying to motivate them to give it to you at this point. You've asked twice nicely. They've said no. Fine. Walk away and tell them what the next step is. And in this case, escalation is absolutely reasonable. And guys, I'll tell you why escalation is reasonable. If you're managing Robert and your VP knows a bunch of stuff you don't know, he assumes you know it. She assumes you know it. If you're managing it and he says, well, what about that thing that happened a year ago? And you say, well, I didn't know about that. It's going to look like you didn't do your research. And you're not going to say, well, I asked HR and they said no. Well, you could say that. And he's going to say, well, you're crazy. Why didn't you come talk to me?
We'll get you very far.
Right? Yeah.
Now, you're going to say this, but this is not a gambit. You're not trying to influence them to give it to you by threatening something.
No. In fact, at that point, you don't want it from them.
Right.
You don't want them to give it to you because you said you're going to the VP, because that's going to play later to her boss or his boss in HR as a threat to overpower them. You're going to say, no, really, that's fine. At this point, I don't think you should give it to me. I don't want you to violate whatever confidentiality
there's a problem in terms of your... So let's get it clarified.
We'll get it clarified. I'll go talk to my VP. He or she can talk to
you.
So
you're doing it. You're not delivering it as a threat. You're just informing them what the next step is.
Yeah, absolutely.
They have a position. You have a position. You believe your position is right, and the appropriate step is to...
And there's at least one HR person right now listening to this going, well, I can't believe you do that. And what does HR do all the time when a manager goes in and says, well, you know, I need to do this, this, and this. Well, listen, I'm sorry, I can't. I'll go talk to your boss. HR escalates just like that, and other people escalate. I'm not picking on HR here. But look, HR supports the business. If you're an operations person, if you're a manager and you have somebody working for you and you have a legitimate interest in improving them and you're not on a witch hunt. Now, to be clear, folks, if you're on a witch hunt, stop listening to this cast, because this cast has nothing to say to people like you. But if you're not on a witch hunt and you really are going to genuinely try to help Robert, and HR won't help, just step away. Don't put HR in the awkward position of having to acquiesce to a threatened escalation. Don't threaten anything. Just escalate.
Yeah.
Just say, go immediately to your boss or your boss's boss or whomever and say, look, I need some help. I've got Robert. I've heard he's got a past performance history issue. I'm preparing development plans.
Look, it's completely professional to tell the HR representative that, hey, this is what's going to go happen. So
so
he or she has the opportunity to go talk to their boss as well. Hey, boss.
Hey, man, I did what I thought was reasonable.
I was talking to Mark. Mark and I have a disagreement. He'll feel strongly about his position. He's apparently going to go talk to his boss. And so I'm talking to you, and we'll work this out. So it's appropriate.
Yeah. Yeah. And when, again, it's not a threat. It's an escalation. In the same way that...
In a good
how
sense.
Many of, yeah. Well, yeah. But it's reasonable. They may not think it's good, but it's reasonable.
Yeah.
Okay? So we can't tell you whether you need to go to your boss first or not. Obviously, if your boss is a VP, easy. And I'm using VP generically to describe somebody fairly senior, generally a VP in a line of business. Sometimes it's an operating officer. Sometimes it's a president or something. Has an HR person that works for them, and the parallel lines cross or join together at that point. I know it's not easy in every organization. There are some organizations with very imperious and powerful HR people, but I wouldn't hesitate to go a couple of levels up to get somebody to say, I need some help here. Now, look, if your boss is best friends with the HR person's boss who told you no, go to your boss and say, hey, I need you to pull a string for me. I need to get Robert's performance records. Yeah, they're always saying it's confidential, but really it's not. Let me make a phone call.
And
then you get an email back the next day. They're in my office. Come by and look at them.
Yep.
And by the way, you got to sign this form saying you signed him out. Okay, great. Let's all control this data about Robert that's supposed to be helping the company, and I'm the only one that's going to spend any time with Robert at all, but I can't have answers.
You got to sign for it because it's written on special paper. That's impossible to photocopy. They came up your way.
Let me also let HR off the hook a little bit here. We respect the fact that in some situations, confidentiality is important. Having spent some time working in the government, there's a widespread agreement that far too many things in the U.S. government, where I can't speak for anything else, are considered classified when they oughtn't be. HR probably overclassifies things. But to be fair, so does IT, so does finance, so does legal. They all do it. They all act as if everything we do is totally private. And it's not. It's all in service of the organization. And we have to assume that a manager is going to behave in an ethical and professional way. Now, if a manager doesn't, let's slap their hands. Let's put them in trouble. Let's do what we need to do. But let's not assume that we're going to build processes to defend against the most unethical of managers when the entire company says the only people we hire are ethical. Doesn't make any sense.
So who else can we talk to?
Yeah, look, you got to talk to a senior person. Either you're following up to the stonewall that HR gave you, or you're talking to them in addition to whatever HR gives you. We want a senior person, if in fact you have inability to do so, because they usually have more history. Now, if you're talking to a senior person who doesn't know Robert and has no history, then that's a waste of time, right? But we want someone with more power than just our boss, unless our boss is the one with that level of power, to know what the situation is. Tell them, and here's what you say. I'm preparing development plans and performance plans for Robert. I know he's got a history. I know you've been here a while. I'd like to get your sense of the situation. Any guidance you can give me, just 5 minutes, anything you can tell me. And you know what they're going to say? Well, you know, I don't want him to be damned by what he did before. No, I'm not asking to do that. It would just help me. Is it a problem with him delivering his numbers? Is it a problem with working with other people? Is it a problem that really involves some employee assistance? And I ought to know what it is generally, but I ought to be respectful of it at a distance. Is there anything I need to look for?
Any specific examples?
Specific examples, yeah. And look, then the next thing you got to do is you got to talk to previous bosses of Robert. Come on. I mean, that's where the performance data is going to come from, right? The company doesn't evaluate him. The manager does for the company. It is a company valid evaluation, but the manager is the one who did it.
Are you implying anything by the order in which we're talking about this, i.e. talking to the senior first person prior to talking to their previous manager? Or no, this is just an unordered list of people to go gather information
from? Well, HR is first. I would talk to a senior person first. I have a rule about levels of authority. The further away down you are from someone, the longer it will take you to get on their calendar. So you try to talk to the senior person first. It's going to take you 3 weeks. Mm. It's going to, you know, most managers, first line managers, it's going to take you 3 weeks to go a couple of levels up. If you start going around and talking to all your buddies, or guys who managed Robert before, people you know who you can just walk over and sit down and talk to them for a few minutes, and then you get done with that and you think, okay, once I get to talk to the VP, then I'll sit down and talk to Robert. It's going to be another month.
There you go.
So you try to get on the VP schedule. Now, if it takes 3 weeks, when you go into the VP's office, you will have talked to these other guys as well.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's
okay.
And that's just a general rule. And I don't know why more people don't do it. I've talked to people before who says, well, the first thing on my list was talking to the VP and I haven't been able to get on his calendar yet. Well, tell me what knowledge you're going to gain from the VP that would keep you from having any valuable conversations with everybody else on the list. Well, I just wasn't sure. I thought he'd give him first right of refusal. Oh, come on. Ask, but go do the other work too. Let's not make it a serial progression. Let's make it a parallel progression.
Yeah, okay. Right? Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. Now, talking to previous bosses, it astounds me. It astounds me. I even did this. We had a guy come to my unit from a support unit. When we were in the 25th in Hawaii, and he wasn't in our unit, and I was told that something bad had happened.
He's transferred for
a reason, but it was like, yeah, we got to take this guy. The sergeant major said to me, "Yeah, sir, we got to take this guy." Like, okay, what happened? Kind of vague. And I realized the sergeant major didn't know, which I thought was not cool for the sergeant major. I said, "Well, that's okay. I'll call a friend of mine." I called the guy. I said, "What's the story?" He said, "Well, he didn't work for me." I said, "I know, but you know the story." He says, "Yeah, I'll tell you the story." He told me the story. I said, "Well, who was his boss?" His boss was this guy. I said, "I'm going to go over and see that guy." He said, "I'm not sure he'll see you." I said, "I'm a captain. He's a captain. What? Or I'm a lieutenant. He's a lieutenant. What? He's not going to, right? I'll admit it's off the record." He's like, "Fine." I walked over. He says, "Oh, so you're the unit that got him." I said, "Yeah." He says, "Well, I'll tell you what happened." And we sat down, and for 5 minutes, he explained what happened. I'm like, "Oh, okay. I can deal with that. That's no problem at all. Let's be clear about it." And if I hadn't known, I would have never guessed that that's what happened to the guy. And he turned out fine.
And you might have guessed something much worse than he actually did. I don't know the situation.
Well, I don't know that it would have been worse, but it would have been different enough. People would have spent 30% of their energy working with this guy, guessing at what he did. And there would have been this 900-pound gorilla in the room. Right? So I went and told two of my sergeants, the guys who work with him in this maintenance.
Well, your head had been a 900-pound gorilla, and in his head is a 900-pound elephant.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So look, You don't just go over to your buddy's cube, flop down, and say, hey, what's the deal with this dirtbag Robert? He's got a past. What's the past? You don't ask, what do I need to look out for? All that does is come across as you building a case now, even before Robert's really shown you what he's capable of, for a quick exit for Robert, which is not cool. It's not professional. Now, look, let's talk about the potential ultimate outcome of this. We said there were two possible outcomes, both of which would make you look good. Either you're a hero because you're able to get rid of him because finally somebody's built enough data to get rid of him, if in fact it justifies getting rid of him, or you're a hero because you turn him around. Folks, you must not fire Robert too soon by using early data that comes from you in the first few weeks that he works for you, as well as previous performance info given to you from previous bosses. Regardless of whether you like it or not, if you do this, you're the one firing him, and you're the one that's going to have to prove to HR and or legal that you have enough data on your own to terminate him. The fact that the organization let him come to you means previous performance history is significantly discounted. It can be used in our final step of this process, but it cannot be core. You can't simply say he was halfway out the door before and I'm going to find the other half, even if I don't intend to. And when I get 50% there and 50% here, I'll be able to fire him. Nope. You're going to have to come up with nearly 100% on your own. And the other 50% is going to be, if you'll pardon a very ghoulish pun, the nail in the coffin. You've got to do this on your own. Anything the organization has seen happen before is going to be discounted. The only way it's going to be less discounted, it'll be more valuable, is if he continues those behaviors and you document them. Look, if you develop a case for termination, and by the way, guys, all we're doing is talking about the two possible outcomes and more time spent on the one that scares you. But frankly, I've inherited three or four Roberts, and I've never had to get rid of any. Oh, I take that back. I didn't have to get rid of one of them because of a really, really egregious mistake that he made that was black and white against corporate policy. But I've saved far more that I've gotten rid of simply because I said, we're starting over, right? Which is the next point we're going to make. We're talking openly about that, not because we favor it, but because we know you fear it. And the things that you fear are the things you're going to do poorly because you're going to be fearful of preparation and you're simply going to say, well, everybody else hung on with Robert and so I'm going to continue hanging on as well, okay? So if you do get to that point where you do feel like you have enough on your own for a termination discussion, you can use that previous performance data, but it's only to establish, to strengthen, to formalize a long pattern previous to your own well-documented standalone case. The previous work results can really, as I said, be really the final sort of almost superfluous nail in the coffin. It cannot be the core of the case, of your case against Robert. And look, another point, when you're talking to the previous bosses, take notes on anything that's said. And that's part of the documentation.
Your notes.
And I got to tell you this whole thing. We're going to talk more about documentation in a minute. But documentation is just, it seems like it's the third rail. You can't talk about documentation. We have a joke at the conference. People say, well, raise their hand at the conference, at the effective manager conference, and say, what do I do when I start taking notes and my direct say, are you documenting this? You look up at them while you're taking notes and you go, yes. As if just mentioning documentation is a problem. And you say, I don't think of it as documentation. I think of it as us being in a meeting and I'm taking notes. Well, are you going to use that against me? What? That you just ask whether or not it's documentation? No. I mean, what if I do something bad? Hey, I want to be clear with you, dude. If you do something bad, I'm going to use it against you. I'm going to tell you not to do it anymore. If you do 100 things bad, yeah, I'm going to use all those against you. And by the way, if you do 100 things good, I'm going to use that in your favor as well. I'll get you promoted. I'll get you a raise. I'll get you a bonus. I'll get you more vacation, whatever. This is not documentation. I'm not keeping track of you. I'm a professional who takes notes on meetings that relate to my business outcomes. And I know I go to 10 meetings a day. I forget stuff, so I write stuff down. And the mistake people make is the idea that documentation has to be formal memorandums for record and letters of understanding and all this other stuff. Not true. Not true at all. So just take notes, okay? And maybe it carries less weight. In other words, if Robert worked for my buddy John 3 years ago, John tells me a couple of stories about Robert, my notes of the stories John tells me 3 years later are less valuable in the total case than the performance documentation that John created 3 years ago, roughly contemporaneously, but they're still part of the documentation.
There's something.
Yeah. Particularly when John tells me the story, but a performance review is not a place for the story to go, and stories generally don't make it into performance reviews. But there's probably an HR person or a senior person or John, his former boss, who knows about it, and that's why we talk to all these people.
And God forbid it ever you ever get into an argument with John about what Robert did, right? Where John told you in the past he did X and then denies it sometime in the future. And the fact that you have contemporaneous notes about that conversation are very useful at
exactly.
that point.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah. All right. So you talk to all those folks, you gather the data, go through it again based on looking at all the data and all your notes, and take some high level what amounts to meta notes, right? You're probably going to notice that the overall sense of Robert's reviews, this is important now, listen carefully here. You're gonna be able to read his reviews and go, this guy didn't do well. But here's what's going to frustrate you. You're also going to realize there's not a lot of usable evidence in the form of statements or damning testimony in reviews. The old phrase, damning with faint praise, ought to have been written about performance reviews, right? In the Army, remember, if you were in a top block, even though being in the second block was really incredibly good, if you were in a top block, if you didn't get all fives on the front, if you didn't get truly outstanding, it was like a kiss of death, right? Everybody had to be godlike in order
to be... evaluations for your NCOs, right?
Yeah.
There's a score, I think it was 125. And if you didn't give a 125...
What you were saying is
they were done.
They were done. Absolutely. Yeah. So folks, there is inflation. Okay. So it's very unlikely that you're going to find behaviors, which in this situation, if you had behaviors, you'd say, well, that's a smoking gun. He did X. Okay. But that's why you're talking to previous bosses to understand what the behaviors were that went into the performance reviews that don't look awful, even though everyone knows they are awful. And trust me, opposing counsel, if you get sued for wrongful termination, opposing counsel will say, let me read this paragraph that was written about my client Robert here and see whether or not that makes him nearly a serial killer as you seem to think he is, Mr. Horseman. And they read this thing and it says a bunch of nice but really mild things, which the judge and the plaintiff's attorney and the defendant's attorney, the corporate attorney, and you all know this guy's a dirtbag, but it says he's a fine professional.
Right.
Not he's a truly outstanding professional, but he's a fine professional. The point is, you've got to go through all of them and take notes and put your notes together. And the whole point of this is, you're a professional. You're gathering data. Part of your job is getting the most out of Robert's performance. If you get handed a machine on a line and they say, don't worry about any of the records of the machine or about its maintenance records or when we've repaired it or what its production capabilities are or where its quality issues are, you just start running, it'll be fine. And no self-respecting technician or maintenance person or operations person or engineer would say, oh, fine, we'll just close our eyes and see what happens. No, show me the maintenance record. Show me the operating record. Show me the quality record. Show me where the flaws are. Show me where there's patterns of misbehavior. Show me the variance logs. Show me let me talk to the maintenance guy, right? This is common work, and too many managers don't do it. You do this, and you're going to feel confident about what you know, as confident as anybody can be, particularly after you talk to everybody else that we've asked you to talk to, and you're going to have a much better idea about how to approach Robert. You're going to give Robert both the benefit of the doubt, which we'll talk about in a second, and you're going to know what you need to know to make sure the benefit of the doubt doesn't go too far, if in fact there's a possibility it will. Okay, but essentially what we're saying is you're going to have to infer some things. You're going to have to take notes about what you see as patterns. Okay, that's what managers do. Then we do recommend, if you have time, you go back to two or three or four of Robert's previous managers, the ones you've already spoken to, and tell them what you've recorded and ask them for input or corrections. Now, guys, you might be thinking, well, this is going to take a couple of weeks. Sure it is. And you might be stuck with Robert for a couple of years. And if you're stuck with Robert for a couple of years and you don't have enough information to get rid of him, but everybody knows he's just as bad as he was before, it's your fault. Now, we'll tell you, having done this myself, if you're doing this for the first time, you're probably going to be surprised by how differently managers respond to your requests once you go back and say, here's sort of what I've put together about Robert. And if you've done your work and you've put together a good historical study, but they didn't really say any of those things, you're just drawing conclusions, some of them are going to demur. They're going to say, no, it's partially true. Some of them are going to help. Some of them are going to ignore you. Some of them are going to offer to help, but they're going to be so political, you'll know not to count on them later if you want help creating your case.
If you're looking for backup, they're not going to be there.
Many of them will at some level be uncomfortable with their previous failure to act on Robert's performance. And so they'll be wanting to distance themselves from whatever solution you're going to come up with.
My personal experience is that if they didn't fire them before, they're unlikely to step up and help you make the case
even though
in the future.
Even though they're willing to crow about how bad he was privately to their buddies.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Like, you know,
they're not going to... What they have to do is, let's say they're a peer of yours. They have to go to the mutual boss and essentially admit that they were derelict in their duty.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unprofessional.
Yeah.
It's like American Airlines pilots saying... Oh, the coffee maker's broken, so we can't take off. Well, that's interesting.
That wouldn't happen.
No, that wouldn't happen. So, guys, beware the political non-answers that you get. In part, they're justified in the sense that the organization has kept Robert. Apparently, someone has decided, this really isn't true exactly, but it's not false either, someone has decided to keep Robert. And so these managers who used to be his managers are saying, who am I to argue with the company, right? I mean, the company's keeping him, so I don't want to be against the company. Yeah.
That's it, everyone. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week. In the meantime, have a great one. So long.